Okay, take two. Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay from Chicago, and I'm the host for the presentation this morning. Today is Sunday, July 28th, 2024. The share ID numbers for Friday, July 26th, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that share number is 21,606. That's 21606. For the 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting, that number is 21,607. That's 21607. This morning, A Vision for You presents God Could and Would If He Were Soft. So our speaker is going to share her personal story of transformation as the result of the implementation of the 12 steps. You know, when the Big Book was written, one of the miraculous things that was acknowledged was that the ex-problem drinker who had found this solution, you know, who was properly armed with facts about herself, could generally win the entire confidence of another alcoholic, or in our case, compulsive overeater, in a few hours. And they went on to say that until such an understanding is reached, little or nothing could be accomplished. Now, that's a pretty bold statement. If we don't reach such an understanding about our problem, they're telling us that little or nothing could be accomplished. And it's not that these 12 steps, if they're written on a sheet of paper, that they saved my life. No, someone could have mailed the 12 steps to me. I could have read them, you know, pulled it out of the envelope, and I could have still died in the throes of this disease. So what it was for me, and perhaps your experience is similar, it was the 12 steps carved into the life of a living, breathing human being that simply made me, you know, want to live in a similar way than he lived. And he had formed a relationship with power. And if I wanted to be truly free, I needed to follow some simple instructions. And so what he told me was what I needed to do was these 12 things. He said, if you do these 12 things, we promise, certain other things are going to come about. But if you don't do these 12 things, there are other things that will come about. And which is it that you want? Certainly your choice. Now, when confronted with this, we get to select our pathway. We get to select our trajectory, live or die. And that was the choice for me. And the co-founders and pioneers of AA were crystal clear. They sought to connect with power by having a spiritual transformation at the level of depth, right? As the result of the application of these 12 things, these 12 steps. And I learned that I was powerless over my alcoholic food substances. And powerlessness is an absolute term. There's no ifs, there's no ands, there's no buts, no qualifications, no conditions. It's an acknowledgement of total surrender. I can't handle the food. And when I eat it, I lose every time. When I fight it, it wins. And for many of us, it's our conviction that the depth and the seriousness with which a compulsive overeater will work the next 11 steps depends directly on the depth and seriousness with which I accept step one. You know, if there's no urgency, there's no surgency. You know, the term surgency is not widely recognized in our dictionaries, but it's sometimes used in context to convey a sense of urgency combined with a surge of energy or motivation to do what's necessary. Now, I've had the privilege of traveling and studying this text with fellows in most states in the U.S. and in other countries. And you know, I remember a guy pulled me aside in between sessions, and he said the following. He said, Larry, you know, those things that I'm hearing from others never happened to me. He said, I never lost a wife. I never lost my family. I never lost a job. I never even considered putting like liquid soap on a sugary dessert item or a salty, savory, crunchy thing, so that I wouldn't eat it. I never left my young child in a running car while I ran into the convenience store to get my fix. I never did those things. I never spent thousands of dollars to get my teeth fixed because of the rot from the acid from my bulimic behaviors. I never did that stuff. And needless to say, one of the things that I said is I said, okay, fine. We've discussed and established what this disease has not done to you yet. How about we talk about what it has done? You know, number one, just like you guys and myself, we're here today. We don't treat people with a string bean problem here. You know, if your life is truly manageable, go enjoy and spread the beautiful light of that manageability to others, most especially in your family. Now, needless to say, this man has recovered today. He had a spiritual transformation from the steps. You're going to hear a story this morning. We hear these stories. So when I get the privilege of listening to someone's story of what it was like, you know, what happened, what her life is like today, I listen with humility. I listen with a healthy respect for this disease and a mindset that's poised for identification in rather than a mental framework to identify out. Have you ever heard Bill's bedtime story? I'll bet some of you have. I'm not going to tell it now. I'm just about done. Don't worry. But this was a significant narrative in the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. And much like we do on this line, he spent a lot of time detailing his struggles with alcoholism. He talked about his path to recovery and the founding principles of AA. In fact, this story is a cornerstone of AA literature, but it's no different than we're going to hear in a moment. You know, Bill's bedtime story recounts his battles with alcoholism, the devastating effects it had on his life, and his numerous failed attempts to quit drinking, despite facing rock bottom moments. And he shares how a profound spiritual experience and a chance meeting with another alcoholic, well, this led to the formation of AA. And, you know, wrapping up, whether it's 1935, when he met Dr. Bob, or some 90 years later in 2024. These stories serve as a testament to the power of personal transformation, the possibility of recovery by being brought into alignment with a higher power, a relationship with power, and the significance of sharing experiences to help others on their journey to sobriety and a relationship with power. Now, joining us this morning to share her experience with the with these 12 things, is Joanice N. From California. And she is a dedicated member of Overeaters Anonymous. She's committed to the practice and the teaching of these 12 steps and 12 traditions as a way of life. I think it's a way of life for her. So please join me in welcoming Joanice N. to the line. Just unmute yourself, Joanice. Good morning to you.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
I can. You're coming through terrific.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Oh, that was a great introduction, man. I'm so grateful to be here today and to share my transformation and how these steps have transformed my life, how I do live them on a daily basis. It's my, I wouldn't have a life if I didn't have this way of life. This way of life has given me a life. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. And just for, I guess, numbers sake or whatever, which is my physical transformation, is when I came, oh boy, to Overeaters Anonymous, I was, I think, 216 pounds, 5'5". I never, I weighed on the scale one time. I was 216 and I quit weighing. And I said, I would never get on another scale as long as I live, kind of thing. And today I am maintaining a 66-pound weight loss for, oh gosh, I don't know, over a year now or so. And I'm here, and I'm here because these 12 steps have transformed my life, as I said. And I am going to start with what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like for me was, as far back as I can remember, food was always a big deal for me in my life. I was always excited at dinner time. My family was always saying, give it to Wani, she'll eat it. I would eat all the leftovers and everything. I ate all of the baby aspirins, the Johnson & Johnson, orange-flavored aspirin. I ate my mom's AIDS diet candy, all of it. And if you are old, well, maybe not old enough to remember those, everybody, but they would give you really bad going to the bathroom a lot. And I ate the whole box. And my mom had to hide them from me. She started hiding them outside in the car in the glove compartment. I remember getting in the car one time, looking in the glove compartment. And I'm like, why are these here? Never dawned on me she put them in there to keep them from me because I was going to eat them all, but she did. And let's see, the Helms Donut Man, yeah, that was me laying out screaming, crying in the front yard if I couldn't have what I wanted from the donut guy that showed up. And, you know, that was just my childhood. You know, that was my childhood was like that. Eating the food before Thanksgiving. My mom would put them by before Thanksgiving, and I'd eat all of this before she could even make the dinner, or 2 days before Thanksgiving. And then when she'd go to make the dinner, this would be missing, that would be missing, and it was me. I remember being caught with the whole container of ice cream, running out the door, you know, slamming the door right before my mom would come into the room so I could not get caught with it. Sneaking food at night while everybody was asleep. I mean, you know, it's just what it was, stealing money from my mom, my brothers, to go and buy, you know, candy and stuff from the store. That was my childhood. And I grew up the baby of five kids. I'm the youngest of five children. And I was pretty spoiled. You know, I kind of got my way in what I wanted. And as I grew up, I discovered alcohol. That's just a part of my story. And the alcohol gave me the ability to just kind of be a free, fun, loose, not so wound up, tight kind of person, you know. And I came into Overeaters Anonymous through AA. I was in AA. My last drink was November of 2022. I am a multi addicted personality. I have gone through alcohol. I have gone through cocaine. I have gone through prescription pills. And all of that stuff was trying to deal with life on life's terms because I just did not know how to. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out how to live life successfully. It just seemed like everything I chose to do was the wrong thing to do. I was the kid that was always in trouble. When my mother would come home from work, I'd start thinking, okay, mama's coming home. What have I done wrong today that's going to get me in trouble? Because I know it was something. My brothers and sisters so much, it was always me. I was always doing something. I don't know, like the big book says, maladjusted to life. Full flight of reality, I don't know, but I know that I had a troubled life, and the substances became my solution. I had to get sober because it was killing me. I had to put down the cocaine because it was killing me. I had to put down the pills because I was having heart palpitations and this and that. I was scared I was going to die. I had to do those things. And so what do I do? Well, food can't hurt me. When I discovered, oh, my God, the first time I had a binge was after a party my family had had, and I decided to make this elaborate, put all kinds of leftover sweets and stuff all together on this big plate and told my brother, look at what I've done. You know, look at this. Look at this. He said, Juanice, that sounds like a binge to me. I had never heard the word binge. I had never known that there was any Overeaters Anonymous or people who were addicted to compulsive overeating. I didn't know about any of that kind of stuff. And I figured I'm free from them drugs. I can eat whatever I want to. This is I have found the way. I have found the joy in life. You know, whenever I was bored, make something. Whenever I was sad, make something to eat. Whenever after all, it's not alcohol, right? I'm not killing myself. I had no idea the power of compulsive overeating. I had no idea, just like the big book says, I had no idea the weapon that I was forging together that would later come back and cut me to shreds, And I was forging this weapon myself to kill myself. I didn't know that. I thought I had found the solution. And so after years of eating like that and still being in AA, I started to see gaining weight. When I was growing up, I was never overweight.
You got
Hello?
Muted. It seems to me there
I
you
sure
are.
Did.
We didn't miss
sure
much.
Did.
You're going
I did.
Great.
And
thank
all
you.
All of a sudden, they started saying, "Press this to unmute." Okay, so I was always thin, and then so after, you know, even when I was using and drinking, I never gained weight. I'm sorry. I started gaining the weight while I was drinking. And using, and then when I got gosh, I lost my train of thought with that. But gaining weight, I started gaining weight, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, I don't look like I'm using drugs. You know, so what? It doesn't matter if I'm heavy, overweight, or even fat. You know, there's a lot of people that are fat and happy. You know, that's what I'm going to be, one of those fat, nappy people. But I know one thing, I'm not giving up my food. And so that I thought that was going to work. And then, of course, it didn't. And I started to suffer.
Jonisa, it looks like we lost you again. Press star one.
I keep getting muted. But anyway, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. And so I started to suffer the spiritual death. I started to suffer emotional sickness. I got real defensive, very angry, very irritable. You couldn't say anything to me. You couldn't look at me any kind of way. I was always like this time bomb just ready to explode. You know, and I didn't understand it. I'm like, what is it? Why am I so? Why was I always? I felt like I was in a constant state of anxiousness. That I was always anxious. You know, everything I did at work, I had to rush and do it real fast. Everything I did at home, I had to rush and do it real fast. And I walked real fast. And I, you know, I came fast and I left fast. And you know, and I was just like this ball of just tension and tenseness, and I did not know what was going on. And so then I finally, when it was not because I was overweight and just didn't want food or anything, I decided that I wanted to get, I was divorced, well, anyway, I decided I wanted to get remarried. I wanted to get married again. And so to get married again in America, I figured, now remember, y'all, this is my thinking, okay? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, and it's just my thinking.
I said, I want to get married. And in America, if you want to get married, you got to be thin. So I said, I'm going to go to Overeaters Anonymous, because I had been to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had heard a lady say in a meeting one time, well, I just use OA for like a diet club. This is what was shared, okay? This is my experience. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to go to OA and use it as a diet club so I can get married. So I went to OA, and I did not work the steps. In fact, the first time I went, I had a lady say, I was desperate, I was crying. And a lady said, I understand that desperation. She said, I will take you on as a sponsee. She said, I want you to go home and write about why is it important to put yourself first. Why is it so important to put yourself first? And this lady might as well have been speaking Greek or Hebrew or something to me, because I was like, oh, God, okay. Well, I don't know what this is, but I can't do it. I know I can't do it. And so years later, I came back to OA to really try, and I did not work the steps. I lost the weight. I lost the weight eating one piece of chicken and one cup of vegetables for lunch and dinner, a sausage, and I don't even know if it was anything else but that sausage for breakfast, because I was told by the person who was sponsoring me at the time, remember, y'all, this is my experience, you know what to eat. You know what to eat. So I knew how to try to lose weight, you know, so that's what I ate. And I lost the weight, and it lasted for about a year or so. And I felt like if I ate one more piece of chicken and one more thing of vegetables, I was going to kill somebody. I threw a TV out the window. I mean, I was really a mess. I was such a mess, you know, because you take away my substance and all I'm left now is with all of that anxiousness and everything I described before. And it's just waiting for the right opportunity to just explode. And then I was in and out of OA about, I don't know, 3 or 4 times. Lost the weight, gained the weight. Lost the weight, gained the weight. And then I went to another, never worked the steps out of the question book, the, you know, the workbook, nothing. Because remember, I had it in the back of my mind that OA is a diet club, because I heard that at the other meeting. So after I had gained the weight again, then I went over to another food faction. This one was no flour, no sugar, you know, 3 meals a day, no sugar, no flour, and it was weighed and measured, though. It was weighed and measured. I lost the weight over there. No, never worked the steps. Never worked the steps. And and then I ended up in that program for about 2 or 3 times. Each time was a year, year and a half, 2 years here. I did this searching, trying to find the solution to this problem in 12-step rooms for about 20 years. For about 20 years, gaining the weight, losing the weight, going to this one, going to that one. And I finally ended up in a food program, and this is where it comes to the end of my what it was like, because this is what brought me to my knees. I went to a food program that my nutritionist now called a starvation food program, and I was there for about a year and a half. I got involved. I was speaking at meetings. I had sponsees. I did the whole thing. I was at service, and still didn't work any. I didn't know what my problem was. I thought my problem was the food. If I could just find the right food plan, you know, if I could just stop putting the stuff in my body that caused me to overeat, I thought I would be fine. I didn't know that there was something wrong with my mind. I didn't know there was something wrong with my spirit. I didn't know it was a spiritual sickness that needed a spiritual solution. I didn't know none of that stuff. But I was seeking, nonetheless. 20 years, I sought a solution. And so in that program, following that food plan, Juanice N got to a size zero. And I thought I had beat the game. I thought I had, surely I have won. I thought that being a zero was like the Holy Grail or something. People was always saying, oh, she's the thinnest one in the room. Let's ask Juanice if they had a question. Let's ask Juanice anything about the program or the traditions or the steps, or not the steps, sorry, the traditions or how the program. Let's ask, because I was thin. I thought I had arrived. I was a zero. You can't go further than a zero. And I thought it was a, what am I going to go now, to fractions? You know, this is it. I've done it. I've won. About a year later after that, I was in that program. I mean, that's not true. I misspoke. I was in that program for 3.5 years. And I had started complaining, actually, to my sponsor about being too thin because I looked really, really old. Even my AA sponsor, who was like in her 70s, she said, Lenny's, you're starting to look old. And I was like, oh, boy. And so I started complaining about that and wanted to gain weight. And she was like, oh, you just want more food. You just want more food. And I waited 6 months. I said, okay, if I want more, she could be right. Maybe I do want more food, so let me wait. So I waited 6 months, and I said, I don't want to live like this. This is too thin. I don't want to be. And she just would not give me any more food. And, of course, she was the arbiter of my food plan, but would not give me any more food. And so I ended up eating. I went to Vegas and ate whatever I wanted to and thought I could stop whenever I got ready to stop, and I couldn't. I absolutely couldn't. I went all the way back up to 210 pounds. I got close to 216, but I didn't go all the way back up to what I thought was my top weight. And I was baffled, just like the big book says. I was that was my true, like in Bill's story when he said quicksand stretched out all around me. I knew I had nowhere to go. Where I'm going to go? Back to one of them food programs? Where I'm going to go? They didn't work. What I'm going to do? Where am I going to go now? I've tried all the different food plans, not recovery program, food plans. I had tried all the different, everywhere I looked to go back to an old solution that I had already tried was quicksand. All I knew is I was going to sink. It was not going to work. I was completely beat. I was completely out of ideas. I didn't know what to do. I had no idea. But I knew that I did not and could not, and whatever I was going to go back to was not going to work. And so what I did was, after I tried just giving up, I did try to give up. I said, forget it. I'm done. I don't care. I can't do it. I got to be grateful for just being free from the other substances. This one I just don't get to have. And I tried to just say, I'm going to just do whatever. I'm not going to worry about it. And I really thought I could do that. And I was so miserable that I got to the point where I just didn't want to live anymore. I said, you know what, God, if I got to live like this, I'd rather you just take me on home. Just take me out of it, because I don't want to live like this. I don't want to live like this. I was so miserable. And I decided one day to just look on Google and look for help with overeating. I didn't care if it was the doctor. I didn't know. I didn't care what it was. And the first person I heard on there said, oh, my God. I heard her say, you know what? I want to tell you right now that abstinence is the most important thing in my world. And all I heard was my own arrogance, my own sickness, because that's what the stuff I used to say when I got up there, when I was the zero and I was the miss it and I was the all that. And I said, nope, don't want to hear that. So I clicked on the next thing that I found on Google, and I heard the man say, I'm going to say something to you guys that might shock some people, But I'm going to tell you right now, abstinence is not the most important thing in my world. He said, my relationship with my higher power is. And then my ears opened. I heard a different idea. I heard something I hadn't heard before. I was interested. I was given a molecule of hope that there might be something different out there. Maybe my perspective was wrong. Maybe my seeking was on the wrong thing. Maybe there is something different out here for me. Maybe there is something that might work. And I started listening to his speech. He had a lot of podcasts or whatever you want. I don't know if he was speaking at meetings or whether, but it's recorded on YouTube. And I started listening to him and listening to him. And then this man started talking about that he worked the steps through Joe and Charlie. And Joe and Charlie is where I had gotten major freedom from the alcohol through. And I'm like, what? Somebody in Overeaters Anonymous is working the steps through Joe and Charlie? Oh, my goodness. And I started listening, and I started listening. And then as a result of that, I called a friend of mine all excited, and she told me, she said, Juanice, I've told you about that program years ago. She said, that's the thing I was telling you about when I was telling you about that phone meeting called A Vision for You. She said, that's what they do. They work through the big book. And I was like, what? But see, she had told me that while I was Miss It. She had told me that while I was Miss Zero. And I didn't want to hear it. I'm like, I got this. I don't need to hear nothing else. And God was trying to get this into me back then. And so I started calling Vision. And oh, my goodness, what am I hearing? What am I hearing? I started hearing the big book as it related to food, to compulsive overeating, because that's what I do. I eat compulsive. I overeat compulsively. It's not planned. It comes from nowhere, and I just do it. You know, against my will, I do it. And I heard all of that stuff on the Vision thing. And then, because I got to give a big shout out for the fellowship. You know, I know God is my God. God is what keeps me absent, all that. But I got to give big shout outs for this fellowship, because there are so many things that changed my perspective from hearing the shares that I heard from you guys, from so many of you. However, you know, with time, I'm going to get to some main ones. So I got a sponsor from Vision. She told me about another meeting that I go to. I don't know if I can mention it or not, so I won't. But she told me about another meeting, and I am desperate. I am miserable. And the meeting, I was able to ask a question one time at that meeting, and I said, you know, I really think that my program might be a little bit better if I prayed more, you know. But I'm basically saying, because I ain't praying. And I was interrupted by an amazing woman that said, no, wait, Juanice, no. And she said something that changed my whole perspective and world. She said, there is no program without prayer. Prayer creates this program. And if my jaw could have hit the ground, baby, my jaw would have been under the ground. I'm like, what? Huh? After she said that, my mind somehow opened up, and I could finally hear the message that this is a spiritual disease. God is the goal. A power greater than myself and a relationship with that power is the goal. Not abstinence, not weight loss, a relationship with the God of my own understanding. And I begin to hear that. It seemed like everybody that shared after that on Vision, everybody that shared after that at the other meeting I was going to, everybody that shared after that, it seemed like in every meeting I went to was talking about God and a God or their God or their higher power. And I never heard that. It's like my spirit, my mind, everything was sleep. Was just sleep. And then it was awakened by those words. And not just those. Things that I've heard from so many shares. And so then now I'm going to go. So that's what it was like. And that's what happened. That's what happened. And so I started to finally realize what the big book was saying, what the doctor's opinion says. You know, in the big book, I'm going to do some big book. In the big book, the doctor's opinion, it says, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the reader will be interested. Ha, 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 ha. Interested, you think? In the medical estimate of the plan of recovery described in this book. Well, what's the plan of recovery described in this book? To me, to put it short, is that God could and would if he were sought. Hallelujah. Ooh, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm getting a little excited here. That God could and would if he were sought. It's the plan. So anyway, but let's see how the big book puts it. Because the plan of recovery described in this book is on page 45 of the big book. Page 45. And it's the 45 paragraph 1 and 2. Lack of power. That was my dilemma. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live. And it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how do we find that power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable us to find a power greater than ourselves, which will solve our problem. So that's the medical estimate. The doctor is given a medical estimate of finding a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. Not looking to the doctors, not looking to the medicine. He talked about that, talked about all this synthetic knowledge and everything, but that nothing, he had seen nothing. This is the medical opinion of God could and would if he were sought. That's what the doctor is giving his medical opinion on. And he said all our synthetic knowledge has not shown any kind of results like God could and would if he were sought. The plan, the medical estimate of the plan of recovery in this book. And I was like, I never saw that before. I never saw at the end of the doctor's opinion, when the doctor says, I earnestly advise every alcoholic to read this book through, and though perhaps he came to scoff, he might remain to what? Go to meetings, go to more meetings, follow a food plan. He might remain to lose weight. No, he might remain to pray. Remember, prayer creates this program. I was like, what are you talking about? Where did this come from? How many years have I been reading this book and never saw all of this stuff? Never saw that the solution, when you know, and there is a solution on page 29. Where is it at? Let's go to it right quick. There's a solution on page 29, how it talks about each individual in the personal stories of this book describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. Not the way he got sober, not how he did this and did that and didn't go here and didn't go there and all of that. How he established his relationship with God because God could and would if he were sought. That's what I'm doing. I heard about a lady that had, and this wasn't, I wasn't at the, heard someone share to me about a person who was at a meeting that said that the 12 steps are like a treasure map. Treasure is God. The treasure is a power greater than myself because that's what I need. I need power. I need power to stay abstinent. I don't need to lose weight. I need power to stay abstinent. And the abstinence and the weight loss and all of that stuff is just a byproduct of this relationship that these steps have helped me to establish with God, to establish that relationship. So let's look at a few more of these, and then I'm going to share a little bit about how I do it and work this thing. No, let me share. Take that back. How I live this thing, how I live it, because I have to live it. You know, these steps have shown me how to establish a relationship with the God of my understanding and how to stay in relationship with that God, how to stay physically fit, spiritually fit, how to stay close to the God, to my God, so that all the other stuff just comes. And so we got to go see that. And this one is, I believe it's page 85. Oh, no. Oh, shoot. Hello, can you hear me? I got kicked out again.
Yeah, you're great.
Yeah, oh, okay, okay. Okay, thank you. Okay, great, thank you so much. Page 85, because I heard some noise. In the big book, my goodness. God could and would if he were sorry. In the big book, on page 85, it says, it is about the second sentence at the first paragraph, first part of it. We will see that our new attitude toward compulsive overeating, I'm going to say it straight out because it was absolutely killing me, had me totally baffled, has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. I'm not thinking about compulsive, I'm not staying abstinent. I'm not thinking about losing weight. I'm not seeking those things. Those things just come. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. That's the miracle of it. That's the miracle of seeking God through these steps. That's the miracle of establishing a relationship with God through these steps. That's the miracle of it. That I get a new attitude. It gets removed. I'm not fighting it, neither am I fighting temptation. I feel as though I have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected by what? The relationship that I have through seeking God, the God of my understanding, and building a relationship with God through these steps. I haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. I'm neither cocky nor I'm afraid. Why am I not cocky? Why would I be cocky? I didn't do it. Because I didn't do it. I sought God. When I finally realized that what I was supposed to be doing through these steps was to seek God, I said, okay, I'm following the stuff that I was told. Get a nutritionist, get a food plan, you know, go to the meetings, make the calls, all of this kind of stuff. I said, but you know what, God? Whether I lose a pound or not, whatever else happens, I am going to seek you with all of my heart. I am going to use these steps and these directions to seek you with all of my heart. And whatever else happens, just happens. And I can tell you the truth. I had been working with my sponsor for about 6 months, the sponsor that I found after I understood what I was supposed to be seeking, which was this spiritual awakening, which was supposed this relationship with God. You know, it was 6 months when I was sharing with a person on the phone, outreach call, when I realized that I had been going in and out of my refrigerator and in and out of my pantry for those 6 months, and I did not even see the food in there that doesn't belong to me. It wasn't like I would see it and say, oh, good, I don't want that today. It wasn't like I would see it and say, oh, that's not my food. It wasn't that I would see it and say, oh, no, I can't have that. Oh, move it to the side. Nope, I'm not touching that. I didn't see it. I wasn't aware it was there. Oh, my goodness. And I sat there that day and I said, oh, my God, the miracle has happened. It has been removed. It feels like it doesn't exist for me, you know? And it's just such a miracle. And it's a spiritual sickness that needs a spiritual solution, and I just did not understand that. And I needed to hear it from my fellows over and over and over again before I could finally seek power, seek a higher power, a power greater than myself that will solve my problem through these steps. So how do I do it? Worked the steps with my sponsor, did everything she told me to do, didn't hold nothing back. I did the absolute best I could. I it wasn't perfect. There were times that work got in the way and other things got in the way, but I tell you, I was determined that I was going to have a relationship with God. I was going to seek God with all of my heart. And so I worked the steps, all of them. I sponsor. The biggest thing I want to speak, I don't know how much time I have left, but one of the main things that I really want to say as far as what it is like now is that when I feel close, and I do, I pray, I meditate, you know, I seek God. The word, the definition of sought, God could and would if he were sought, if he were pursued, if he were hunted, if he was searched for, if he was chased down and looked up, and I look up so much stuff. I didn't know this what the definition of this was until last night when I looked it up for this talk. To seek also is to search out by any means, to try to find or discover by searching and questioning. Oh, my goodness. And I just started doing all of that. I just started doing all of that through these steps. So through working the steps, I found out that what was blocking me was from God was my character defects. You know, my fear, big one. My selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, dishonesty, and I could go on and say entitlement, competition, jealousy, all of that stuff I found out through the steps is what was blocking me from God. So, and that was just food for me to seek him with. That was, okay, so I'm going to seek God with this stuff. I'm going to seek God with this stuff. My sponsor taught me how to write the definition of the defect, write out the opposite, look up the definition of the defect, and then look up its opposite and its definition. And for me, what that turned into was prayers. God, please remove my jealousy, but not just jealousy. What's the definition of jealousy? It helped me to go deeper. And it was a feeling of grudging and somewhat admiring discontent aroused by the possessions, achievements, and qualities of others. Now, see, that goes deep. This where I could see my behavior. I could see how I was, you know, the possessions and achievements and qualities of others. I could see how that is what was really at the crux of the defect. Are those things, and I prayed them, and I prayed them, and I prayed that God would please help me to stop comparing myself to others, worrying about myself all the time, wanting what other people have, wanting their part too, and not being satisfied with just my part. But no, I want your part. I want to be who you are. I want to have your accolades. I want to have your praises. I want everybody's praises. I want to be the only one getting praises. See, I didn't know none of that until I started looking up this stuff and doing this work in a step 6 and 7. I couldn't see any of that stuff until I started praying, seeking God to remove this from me, because God could and would if he was sought. I prayed this prayer for my sister and my brother, who I was so jealous of. I had no idea how deep it was. And one day I was sitting praying this prayer at my computer, and God said, now put your sister's name in the bottom of the St. Francis of Assisi prayer. See, now I know I'm getting somewhere. When God speaks to me with something I would have never thought of that. And I started to pray, God, grant that I may seek rather to understand my sister than only seek for her to understand me. God, grant that I may seek rather to to comfort my sister than only seek for her to comfort me. I didn't realize that's all I was doing, and that is what was fueling this jealousy, by me seeking for her to comfort me every time I was around her, seeking for her to understand me, seeking for her to love me, not seeking for me, and I was only seeking that stuff from her. Oh, my God. I sat there and prayed that prayer, and I felt a physical presence in my chest, and I was like, oh, my goodness, what is happening here? Where I truly believe at that moment, God was rearranging my heart, and I could feel it. And I would have never even had the words to put to it had I not been going to a meeting where they were always talking about God rearranging your heart. Oh, my goodness. And I said, I was hooked then. I said, God really can do this. God could and would if he were so. God can and God will remove the obsession. God can and God will remove my defects. God can and God will rearrange my heart. God can and God will make me transform me into a better woman. God can and God will give me peace. God can and God will show me how to be a friend. God can and God will show me how to support others and forget about myself and not only worry about find me, fix me, feed me, support me, praise me, worship me. God can and God will remove that stuff if he were sought. Ow! If he were sought. God can give me a good life. God will give me. God has given me a good life. And to think about abstinence and weight loss is so far down on the scale now. It's so far. I think about how I treat others. I think about how am I doing with my family. I think about how am I doing at work. How honest am I being? God could and God would give me, help me to be honest and true to myself and others if he were sought. If he were sought, my life is not what it used to be. My life is different today. My view of the world, you know, my view of God's world, God's people, even when I'm hurt by others, even when I am, you know, disappointed by others, even when life don't go my way and things happen, I know how to live. I know how to do. I know where to go. I seek God because God could and would heal my heart. My hurts from the past have been healed. A lot of the major ones, some of the real big ones have been healed from my past just through these steps, seeking God through these steps. God can and God will if he is sought. I don't know. How much time do I have left?
You got another 3 hours.
Oh.
No, we're wrapping. No, we're wrapping up. Yeah, wrapping up in a little bit.
Oh, good. Good.
Right? Okay.
Pardon me?
I said, then we'll go to some Q&A. I bet some people have some questions for you.
Okay, so I'm wrapping up. Okay, good. So there you go. You know, God is, this is me saying, God is real. He has entered into my heart. He lives in such a way that is truly miraculous. As they talk about, I believe, on page 25, he has come in and he's commenced to do the things for me that I could never do for myself. I could never change my defensiveness. I could never change my jealousy. I could never change my fear. I had to sit down and do a fear inventory this morning on speaking today. And God said, forget about yourself and think about others. Forget about your ego and think about others. I realized that my ego is egoing. You know, my ego is wanting something. My ego is trying to get something, you know, and I did, but God could and would. He relieved my fear. He relieved it. Where I could come and think about somebody else that might need to hear what I've gone through, somebody else that might be looking for some help like I was looking for a real solution. The big book says these men had a real answer, and that answer, God could and would if he was sought. With that, I'll pass.
Larry, press star 1.
Oh, boy, it's one of those days. Can you hear me okay?
Good.
Okay, good, good. Well, Juanice, I just wish we could find someone with some passion. Thank you so much, Juanice, for your just very relatable, authentic, original presentation. I was thinking, if you want a new lease on life, if you want a new lease, all Juanice. Okay. So now we're going to transition. We're not a glum lot, right? We're going to transition over to a question and a Q&A period for Juanice if you have a question for her. We're going to take some names in a moment. Let me first give you the share ID number for Juanice's presentation. This is Juanice N, and her name is spelled J-A-U-N-I-C-E, and it's pronounced Juanice. That number is 21,609, 21609. And so if you have a question for Juanice, please press star 1 and give me your first name and last initial. Who has a question?
Ken.
I heard you now, Ken. Ken. Who else?
Larry G.
Larry.
Deborah P.
Oh, was it Deborah P? Was that? And then
Barbara
N?
P.
Barbara P.
Jessica
P.
Henrietta.
Jessica
Hanayeta.
And Hanayeta. Okay, let's stop there for a second.
Hello?
We lost you again, Larry.
We don't hear you again, Larry.
Okay, that seems to be the theme. I heard Bonnie, Christina, Jana, Ken, Larry G, Barbara P. I heard Ann, Jessica, and Hanayeta. If I didn't hear you, let's hold off. Let's see where we get through these. And let's start with Bonnie with a question followed by Christina. Bonnie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there's a reason why you weren't supposed to be heard. Because what you had was so powerful, my dear friend Juanice. This is Bonnie B. from Florida. Thank you, thank you, thank you for showing up today. What an amazing share. So here's the question I have for my dear friend, and we've spoken in the past, and you know I've got nothing but big love. Can you give me an idea of what your what your pattern looks like or what your practice looks like with regards to connecting to God on a daily basis? And I'll pass with that. Thanks much.
Yes. Hi, Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie. I missed you. I haven't talked in a while. Yes. Oh, gosh, of course. Yeah, what my sponsor taught me. What my sponsor taught me and what her sponsor taught her. When I get up in the morning, the first thing I do is I say, because it says, the big book says, upon awakening, okay, when as soon as I open my eyes, I ask God to direct my thinking, and I ask him, I pray that it please be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, and self-seeking motives. And then I will usually get up and get dressed, and then I go and I sit down and I pray. I pray. Sometimes I'll read something out of the book. Sometimes I'll read something from another book, and then I'll pray about it, and then I meditate on it. And usually my practice in the morning goes an hour or so, because God always will illuminate a word or a word in that I have never looked up before, and I'll go and look up, and that's what I call seeking. I go and look up something, and when I'm seeking, God reveals something to me. And then and I feel close to him as ever. It's such an amazing feeling. Ooh, it's such an amazing feeling. And then as I go throughout the day, I have these little booklets that I bought that I write down to whenever I'm disturbed. Did I feel afraid? Continue to look for fear and selfishness and dishonesty, and I'll write them down. Sometimes I need to stop right then. And really do a 10-step and call somebody on the phone and do it right then. Sometimes I'll do it later, Sometimes I'll do it in my nightly review with my nightly review partner. But those 10 steps reveal to me what I need to be praying about. They reveal to me what I need to, you know, seek God with. And I always, I've got stacks of prayers that I've written about these things that pop up. And I look them up, definition, the opposite, and I start praying it. And I pray it and pray it and pray it, usually every day, until I see some change. Until I see some change. Hey, I see no change. I'm going to keep praying it. And then I do my nightly review with my, you know, and then that's it. That's it.
Thanks for the question, Bonnie. Okay, next up we have Christina with the question, followed by Jana. Christina, good morning.
Good morning. Pastor Wani, I'm ready to jump and dance and shout in the spirit. Brought me back to my Pentecostal days, girl. Now, I want the same fanfare you gave Bonnie. You know I love you. We haven't talked in a while. My question is, can you talk about your gum chewing event and how God removed that from you? Because that really helped me out when I was stuck in the gum chewing part of the addiction. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. Woo. Yeah, I'm trying to remember, Christina. I know the gum chewing was a relapse, but I just chewed the gum that day. The gum chewing, I could tell you how I knew that it was a problem. The gum chewing, it's so funny. It seems like every time I hear something that somebody else say, I end up thinking I can try it, and it's a disaster. But the gum chewing was I would chew probably 5 or 6 packs of gum in a night, and I would chew it until my jaw was like couldn't open anymore. TMJ, my jaw was locked shut, and I had gastritis so bad one time I couldn't walk. I was literally bent over and could not walk, and it still took me a while to, because I'll say, oh, I'll just chew less, and then it got to the point where I just could not stop. I would go back to the store and buy another pack, go back to the store, and I'm talking about these big plenty packs. And so when it came up in my spiritual, since I've been in a spiritual, this spiritual quest, what happened? I can't really remember, Bonnie. I can't remember what happened that night that made me think that I was supposed to be able to chew gum. And that night is when I really surrendered it, though, is when I was like, okay, God, this is it. I'm done. I'll never do this again. I don't want it. You can have it. Please take it. And a big thing, I just kind of let it go. It was kind of like one of those foods on my food plan that I realized I'm not going to be taking and I can just let it go. But I'm sorry, I really don't remember exactly what we had talked about at the time, Bonnie. I mean, Christina, it's been a while. I'm sorry.
I just remember your jaw was freezing up and you were trying to make you couldn't even talk.
I couldn't open my mouth. I had to force my mouth open. Force it open. It wouldn't open on its own. Oh, it was so painful. So, yeah. And, yeah, God could and would remove gum chewing, too, if he saw it, because he did for me. I haven't thought about chewing any gum, and I don't know when. Thank you, God.
Thanks for that. Okay, next up we have Shanna C., followed by Ken W.H. Shanna, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you so much. This is Shanna C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee. Oh, my gosh, Juanice. Thank you. And without me yapping too much, I just want to say that I haven't bawled on a meeting in a long time, but today, and you really, thank you so much for your authentic sharing part, man, because I get it. I identify with, literally about everything you said other than the getting down to the size zero, but for me and my, you know what I mean? It's just like, thank you, God. And I identify so much with the whole, the spiritual, you know, the connection with God and the God shot. And I'm, one thing I'm most grateful for is the fact that we can get on here and we can share the problem and we share the physical allergy, the, you know, the mental obsession and all of that stuff we do. We share that so much and it's absolutely necessary. But what's really cool is when people get on here and share their experience in the solution and how the relationship with their higher power has changed and how that power shows up in their life for them and does for them what they can't do. That's the stuff that I get to identify with too. But I'm not crazy. Like, it is, the program really is working. Like, it does work. And I'm so grateful for your example. My question is, can you please share your more experience with your God removing the defect of jealousy and all of that, and how your relationship with your sisters and family changed through the process of share your favorite amends, basically what I want. Thanks so much.
Is it, share my favorite amends?
Yeah, man.
Oh, boy. Woo, girl. Do I have a favorite amends? You know, my relationship with my sister and my brother, whom I love so much and hated them for so many years because of, they were not loving me, feeding me, fixing me, supporting me all the time. Not like they didn't do it, just not all. Sometimes they wanted something for somebody else, and that wasn't okay with one. No, I want all of it all the time. Anyway, my relationship with my brother and sisters is a delight. I spent the evening with them the other day, not my brother, but the one sister that I have more jealousy about than the brother anyway, but I spent the evening talking with she and my older sister that we hadn't done in I don't know how many years, all night long. And it was and I would have rather done that than go to Paris. I would have rather sat there with them and did that talking and reminiscing and laughing than go to Paris. I mean, it's just because all of that gunk is gone. You know, my absolute favorite amends to that brother, oh boy, good gracious. My amends, my living amends to them is when we are around in the family, I used to always have to be the center of attention. I was the baby, after all, and I needed all the attention. Now, when I go, I think about other people. I let people be people. If nobody's talking to me, if nobody's saying anything to me, I don't try to do what I used to do. I try to show up differently. And, you know, only God gives me the ability to do that, you know. And I do pray before I go to these family gatherings and stuff that I won't be trying to, you know, be understood and loved and, you know, comforted and all of that stuff, you know. And that really is, it actually is one of my favorite. My time with my family is so good now, I can't even express it. And it's all because of self-forgetting. You know, I'm going to just share this real quick. You know, the Cambridge Dictionary, this is something that blew me away. I decided to look up define self-forgetting. How do I forget about myself? And it says the act of forgetting about yourself, your own interests, and caring more about what other people need and want than about what you yourself need and want. And that is from the Cambridge University, not Recovery Jam, Recovery 101. It's from the university, a college. It says the secret of human happiness is found in self-forgetting. And I'm like, what? So that's my amends I make to my brothers and sisters when I'm around them now, is I try to self-forget.
Thanks so much for that, Juanice, and for the question, Shanna. Okay, if we get right to the question so we get more people in, next up is Ken, followed by Larry. Hi, Ken. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Juanita. It's very inspiring. You stopped saying a word in the middle of your talk. You stopped halfway through it, and you apologized for it. I just want to tell you, you said that word in more ways, different ways, than I've ever heard it said before throughout your entire talk.
Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Don't shy from Hallelujah, because we say it in all kinds of different ways, and you said it. Thank you. Is there any place that you won't go or don't go?
Is there any place I won't go or don't go?
Or you don't go today?
No.
Hallelujah.
There's no place I don't go or won't go. I go everywhere, buffets, whatever. Big family, this and that, where everybody's eating and gorging. As long as I continue to seek God, He could and would keep me from even worrying about it. It doesn't exist. I don't see that stuff. I don't. I took my girlfriend to the Bel Air Hotel for her birthday, and they came out with this elaborate birthday celebration thing, you know what it is, the little things that they give us. And I sat there while she ate it. I didn't think much of about it. And when I spoke to a friend on a call after that, they asked me, they said, well, what flavor was it? And I said, I never even thought to ask. It wasn't an interest. I don't do that. God does that. I don't know what it was, because I didn't even think to ask. So, no, I go anywhere. Anywhere any other free man can go, as long as I stay close to God, spiritually fit.
All right. Thank you, Ken. All right. Next up, we got you, Larry, the real Larry. Step on up, followed by Barbara. Hi, Larry.
Thank you, Larry. This is Larry G. from California, mother of God. I feel like I've been to a AA revival meeting. Oh, I just love you. I identify with you so much, especially the helmsman. The helmsman was my God growing up. That beautiful brown panel Chevrolet truck with those long drawers. Oh, I very few people I know remember that. Question. How has your understanding of a power greater self, evolved since you've been in a vision for you?
Ooh, my goodness. Oh, my gosh, Lord. That took the strength out of my knees. It has evolved in so many ways. I had such a wrong idea of what my God, the God of my understanding, was supposed to even be. I believed that there was God. I didn't think He could do nothing. I didn't think He could do anything. I didn't grow up seeing that or anything. How has it evolved? It has evolved like this. I understand that He knows more than I know. Didn't know that. I understand that His way is better than my way. Didn't know that. I understand that He is always here and always aware and always like he's never sleeping. I used to think that maybe God wasn't paying attention, but God is always watching. He's watching. He's always watching. He don't miss nothing. I can't hide. It has evolved in the way that I know that I can't hide lies. Where even my lies were, it was the truth. If you didn't know, it wasn't the truth. If people didn't know, now I understand that God wants truth in my inner parts, in my heart, in my gut, you know, not just in the outward. You know, I hear from God, I pay attention to that little voice now, and I do what it says. Am I perfect at it? No. But oh my God, I never did it before. I never listened to that little voice before that says, no, turn the TV off and go do something with the baby. You know, no, sit down this morning and do a fear inventory. Just do it. You know, get God involved. I rely on God for a lot more than I ever have in my whole life. I look to God for strength and guidance and for real, not just sounding good, you know, and I never did any of that before. I didn't know I could. I didn't know it was really available. I didn't know God could really do anything. I didn't know that. But now I do. I know from experience that through this way of living, through these steps, man, It has true. It has. It has really evolved. Yeah. Thank you, Larry. I love you so much, my brother.
Okay. Thanks for that question, Larry. Okay. Next up, we have Barbara, followed by Ann. Barbara.
Hey. Good morning, everybody. Barbara T., compulsive overeater, the Atlanta area. And Juanice, oh my gosh, you've got me wanting to go so much deeper on my own spiritual journey. Like, I feel very inspired and touched. So my question is, how quickly do you start sponsees on prayer? I'm thinking I do a lot of work with people, but we don't get to them praying for quite a while. How do you see that we could get maybe, or I could get faster to get them praying, like from the minute we start the work? How do you do it?
Mm-hmm. The way it was taught to me by my sponsor and her sponsor taught her. We pray from day one. And the way it is done is there's a few requirements for being sponsored. And one of them is spending 30 minutes in the morning with God. Whatever you want to do, spiritual reading, listen to some spiritual music, you know, prayer and meditation, you know, guided meditation, something. But 30 minutes. And for me, if you just get up, sit in that chair and just say, okay, higher power, source, spirit, whatever you want to say, I'm here. I'm here and I'm going to be here for the next 30 minutes. You know, if you can't do no better than that, then do that. But it starts from the beginning. If you want, you know, you could pray the third, serenity prayer, set aside prayer. You know, if they just, because I have had sponsors say, well, give me some suggestions. Okay, good. Serenity prayer is a great one. The set aside prayer is a great one. You know, prayers like that, that's just going to help me through this process that's about to begin. The big book says that that we stood at the turning point before they took the steps, they prayed. They said, we asked for his care and his protection and care with complete abandon. So I had told one sponsee, pray that, pray. You know, this is how I would say it. God, please protect me and please take care of me while I go through this process as I surrender myself to you with complete abandon. Please protect me and take care of me. Then they took the steps. So anyway, so yeah, we pray from day one.
All right, let's see. I don't know where we're gonna end up, but let's move on to Ann. Ann, you got a question for Juanice?
Yes, Larry, thank you so much. I'm Ann, a compulsive overeater in New York. Juanice, I never cried so much. I'm so grateful 2 days in a row. I'm so blessed. I feel God in you, and I saw him in you yesterday. Here's my quick question. Juanice, how do you, mentioned a baby. How are you fulfilling God's will today?
How am I fulfilling God's will today? Being on this meeting. Mm-hmm. Being on this meeting, even though I was terrified and you know, couldn't have sleep and all that. He said, forget about yourself. Forget about yourself. This is my will. I wasn't even thinking about a special edition or any of that kind of stuff. I was, you know. But anyway, how do I feel? Yes, I do. I've taken my goddaughter's son in. She's not able to take care of him right now. How do I fulfill God's will? I be honest as I can. How do I fulfill God's will? I try to help people. I sponsor. How do I fulfill God's will? Sharing at meetings, carrying this message. How do I fulfill God's will? When he asked me to do something, I do my best to do it. The latest thing was eating my meals at my table and not in front of the TV and getting rid of my TV in my bedroom. Get rid of it and just get it out because I was watching too much TV, and the TV was standing between me and God, and God had been trying to get me to get rid of it for a while. How do I fulfill his will? In that, he told me, he said, Juanice, if you get rid of the TV, I will replace it with myself. Oh, my goodness, I want to say that word again. Hallelujah. I mean, you know, I will replace it with my presence. So how do I fulfill his will today? I do everything that I think he would want me to do and do the best that I can to forget about myself when I'm doing it. But it's a lot of things.
Thanks for the question, Ann. Okay, we're going to wrap up with a question from Jessica. Hanayeta, you can, we'll get Juanita's contact information and you can call her. Jessica, what do you got?
Hey, it's Jessica C. Hey, Larry. Hey, Juanita. Oh, my gosh.
Hi, Jessica!
What a delight to hear you today. And when you were getting emotional, I was right there with you. My question is, you mentioned you were earlier in your life, you often had fear and anxiety and sort of rushing around in the state of anxiety. And I was wondering if you could talk about how you work your program and how you seek God and how God helped you in that area. Thank you.
Oh, sure. Fear, dealing with the fears. This program has taught me how to see things I couldn't see before through inventory. And, you know, we used to hear it a lot, the process of uncovering, discovering, and discarding everything that's blocking me from God. And all of that anxiousness mainly is ego somewhere in there somehow, but all of the anxiousness is fear. And so I have, when I'm afraid, when I feel it, I sit down, okay, God, what is this? And whatever comes up, whether it's right or wrong, don't matter. Whatever, because either way, I'm still seeking. Whatever comes up, I just inventory it. Why do I have this fear? You know, what is being threatened and interfered with? You know, why do I have it? Is it my, you know, usually it's, you know, my self-esteem, same stuff as a resentment. My self-esteem, my security, my pocketbook, something is being threatened and interfered with. You know, if I have to be the best and I have to be the fastest and I have to get it better, and nobody's watching. Nobody's watching. A lot of my anxiety and fear I found out through inventory was competition. I was always in competition with everybody everywhere, even though they didn't even know me. I was in competing with them. And so I did an inventory on competition, wrote a prayer for competition, and the opposite. God, please remove this from me so I can stop competing all the time because it was causing all that fear and anxiety and stuff. So, yeah, same thing. Steps, prayer. Steps and prayer. Steps and prayer. God could and would, if he was sought, could and would relieve me of all that anxiety. I walk slower today. I'm not all in a big rush. I catch myself sometimes. I always had to look like I was going somewhere because I was so important. I had to hurry up and get somewhere because, you know, and didn't have nowhere to go. But I walk slower now. I take my time. And all of that is out of dealing with fear through these steps. Mm-hmm.
Oh, great way to end there. Juanita, thank you so much for your presentation. It was terrific. It was terrific. And we have a real diamond in our archives now here. So everyone, hang tight. After the recording, I'm going to ask Juanita for her contact information so you can reach out to her. And once again, let me give you the share ID number for Juanita's presentation. Again, it's Juanita N, as in Nancy from California. That number is 21,609. Okay, so we're going to close with the reading from our namesake here. It's on page 164. And I will read that. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road to happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.